It's Sunday. It's WEEI Football Sunday. One more miserable week of this season as we try and slog to the finish line here. But one bright spot that we've had week in and week out is when we get to talk to NBC Sports Boston's Tom Ekern, who joins us here one final time for Week 18. Tom Ekern, how you doing today, sir?
Christian, it's been a spirited season. It's never not interesting with the New England Patriots.
You got that right. It may not be fun to watch. It may not be inspiring to fans of the team and people who put their life savings into these seats up there and season tickets and so forth. But it has been interesting, and here we are at the end of a season, which I think is going to be an interesting end. Everybody's got their eyes on what's going on Monday, but let's talk a little bit about this game here today. Do you expect Drake May to play very much, if at all, today, and do you think he should?
I do expect him to play a smidgen. I don't know what their plan is for him in terms of playing the entire game, but they, again, unless they have had another instance of poor communication and poor advertising, he's going to start the game, according to, I believe it was Alex Van Pelt. So I'd love to see them have the consistency to do what they say earlier in the week. So I'm presuming he will play. I think a cameo is fine. I don't see the problem in having him out there for that. And I know that people will engage in all manner of discourse as to why that might be. Well, why didn't you sit him last week? Well, okay. That's a dishonest argument, disingenuous. So, to me, I think that he should be out there for just a moment or two, then get him the hell out. The ride is over. The journey is over. As they say with their running backs and pass receivers, when you have the ball, understand when the journey is over and hit the deck. There was progress that could be made in these final four games. They really kind of forfeited the opportunity to make great team-wide progress, so now it's about individual progress for individuals.
Tommy, do you sense or have any knowledge of any kind of change in ownership, anyone in the front office's perspective on how they look at the success level of this season over the last 3 weeks? There was a lot of talk about, hey, you want to finish strong, come out the last four games and show you're trending towards something. You did that against Buffalo, but it almost feels like the other two games, Arizona and the Chargers last week, kind of negate what you showed in Buffalo.
Yes. I think to answer your question as it was posed, do I sense any change? Yes, I sense it. I haven't been told that necessarily, but I sense the tenor has been altered a little bit around the team in terms of the certitude with which they'll approach this offseason. Does that mean there's definitely changes being made? I am not saying that at all. But I think that there is more pause has been given in these final three games that we've seen so far than I anticipated them having. And I think there's good reason for it. I really do. I thought the Arizona game might have been, except for the post-game commentary where Mayo said, you said it, I didn't. But I didn't think that game was offensive as many folks did. I felt it was just culpable with a player here and there on particular drives. But I do think that the Chargers game was abhorrent and inexplicable and embarrassing and enough to give even greater pause given the fact that in two out of the three games where it was critical, where you did advertise as a coaching staff and as an organization how important it was to close the season strong, even though these were meaningless games, to fail to do that has to give anyone pause.
We're talking with Tom Ekern, NBC Sports Boston. Tom, a couple weeks ago, Mayo was asked about the Crafts and sort of his relationship with them and them speaking out or not speaking out about their support of him. And he said, well, even if they do speak out, what's that going to do? That was a few weeks ago. The seat has gotten much, much hotter. And I think at this point, I don't know if you agree, them saying something would go some way, at least, for people like us not talking about him losing his job every day, which is what it's come to now. You've seen calls in various media outlets at the Herald, at the Globe, and certainly over at the Athletic of people calling for Mayo to lose his job. The Crafts still haven't said anything. How much do you read into that here on Week 18 now?
I do think the Crafts are very reactive and pay close attention to what is said in the media, especially at this time when the team is listing so badly and kind of rudderless. So I think they pay even greater attention. I wouldn't say anything if I were them either. I wouldn't. Do you know why? Because I know how we operate. And whatever they say can and will be used against them if they decide to change their minds. Additionally, we will wonder about the, why did it take so long anyway? Leave it alone. If I were them, I'd leave it alone. Now, I think that many people like to see this, you know, it's basically the same thing as wearing an American flag on your lapel pin to try and prove something or signal something that people would presume otherwise already. I mean, don't signal something, be something. So to me, if they come out and say, you know, we're disappointed, but Gerard's our guy, why? You should give yourself the latitude to make a change if you need to. And if you, it just invites more problems to me to do that. And argue with me if you want to. Chime, are you there?
Chime is not here. And I wouldn't argue with that because I sort of agree. And that was what you said before. I just think that if they, you talk about them changing their mind. Well, what if they change their mind? What if they've already made their mind up? Like, this makes it seem more like they've already made their mind up about not, we don't support him.
I think they've been embarrassingly poor at helping Mayo in terms of messaging throughout the season, organization-wide. And I think that Elliot Wolf, speaking to Henry McKenna, God bless Henry McKenna, from forgetting the conversation
Fox
with
Sports.
Elliot Wolf, Fox Sports, thank you. I was about to say USA Today, and I knew that was not the outlet. And he did a terrific job, and it's a very good story, but they should be embarrassed. Elliot Wolf should be embarrassed at the lack of ownership that he has taken for the roster and the lack of stand-up. I don't want to say cowardice because it's football.
Well, that's the first time we've heard anything from Elliot Wolf since I don't even know when, right? Like, I mean, he's barely,
yeah,
he's been in the shadows this whole time letting Mayo take all the questions.
It's and he built the roster that
right.
has been lamented publicly and privately throughout the season. And yeah, Bill Belichick helped to build it. But the surety with which Elliot Wolf spoke in the preseason about how things would be settled and how things would develop, and then to see the commentary that he had with Henry McKenna and to say we expected players to develop differently and we won't make that mistake again, that is a bus rolling of the coaching staff. So if I'm the Crafts right now, I'm looking at that. I'm looking at Mayo, looking at Wolf with Ed Van Pelt, with the lack of quarterback sneaks, and I'm looking at all of it and going, wow, these guys are really starting to chew each other apart. Now, did the Crafts invite this kind of atmosphere and environment by trying to have a collaboration with a bunch of people who didn't know each other? They don't know each other. They barely met. So, to me, it's a much messier mess than I expected it to be by week 18.
So, Tom, you, a couple weeks ago, talked about the idea of this football overlord, if maybe that was a way that they could kind of clean up, organize the football operations. Do you think now that the Crafts, if they are thinking of moving on in a big way, they might be more open to a general manager or a head coach who would operate more as a football overlord, in a simple way to say it, giving the franchise back over to not necessarily somebody who's Bill Belichick, but we've seen them swing back and forth with the pendulum of control of football operations in the past.
Yep. They said, okay, you know what? We want our franchise back with Bill Parcells. They pivoted to a triangle of authority in 1997 with Pete Carroll, Bobby Greer as the GM, Andy Wozniak as their cap guy. That went for 3 years, and that team went from the Super Bowl to out of the playoffs with an unbelievably talented roster. Bill Belichick comes in, that talented roster is, by and large, the foundation and pillars of it are still there, and he's got them not just back in the Super Bowl in a year, but winning it, and then two more the next 3 years. So what works for the New England Patriots over the course of the last 35 years? It works when they have a football, a one-voice operation. And it didn't work with Bill Belichick at the end. And you can look at, they're driving a 2000 Volvo around. To listen to Albert Breer this week talk about how undermanned and understaffed and ill-prepared they are in the front office for the 2024 NFL, as opposed to the way they've been operating, was really damning. But if you're going to stick with the folks that you have, And I don't think the Patriots should change just for the sake of changing. They need to pick one candidate, and I think we would agree who that is, pursue that candidate. But if it's not Mike Vrabel, don't bring in Ben Johnson. What do you need that for? You don't need another first-year head coach. The problem is the stability of the team. And I think the stability would come with either you keep the group that's here and say, okay, we're going to increase stability and put somebody over them, and that's because you couldn't get somebody to instill more stability, or you make a move that you believe will instill more stability. But the Kraft cannot be football people. They don't want to. They say they don't want to. They don't need to be evaluating Elliot Wolf. They don't need to be evaluating Jerod Mayo. They don't need. They need somebody above them, excuse me, below them, to report back on how it's going. So I still believe that strongly. Do you too, Mego, feel that that would be, if you stick with these guys, you need somebody over them?
I honestly just, I have a hard time seeing sticking with these guys beyond another year. I feel like they might try to do, if I'm just totally speculating and they decide to go forward with Jerod and any other manner of the coaching staff here, it's because they're trying to do right by the decision and the agreement that they made with Jerod and be personally accountable. But I don't think that that's necessarily the right move for the team, if that makes sense.
Isn't that being a slave to the wrong motivations?
Yeah.
To a degree.
100% it is. But also
but
then,
not,
Tom...
It's probably, in a way, them thinking of trying to do the right thing. Do right by Jerod. Do right, put him in
they
a better situation
right
next year.
They tried to do the right thing with Bill.
Yeah.
They tried to do the right thing with Bill at the end. Okay, he deserves it. He deserves it. He deserves it. That was something that I was told publicly. We heard publicly. I was told privately. Bill deserves to be able to... he earned the right to be able to run the team the way he sees fit. And never was it said to me. I said, well, what would your succession plan be? I once spoke to somebody in private about that. And they said, look, this team means too much to Bill for there ever to be any uncertainty about what he's going to do when he's leaving. He will tell us so far in advance because this team means a lot to him. And we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, but Bill has given no indication yet that he is intending on leaving. So until then, we're not going to be mobilizing on succession plans necessarily. You know, that was prior to 2022. But that was the tenor of the team. They gave Bill the latitude to run the football organization the way he saw fit, to make the decisions the way he saw fit, and to author his own exit as best he could until they decided that, okay, we can't do that anymore. But that's what they wanted. They tried to do the right thing by somebody who earned it. And they're trying to perhaps do the right thing again if they are not urgent with their with the course that they set. Urgency of this franchise since 2017, 18, 19 has been so lacking. And I know people, well, I won a Super Bowl in 2018, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, they did. They went 11-5. Every game they lost that year, there was a team that didn't make the playoffs, and there was grave dysfunction throughout the year. They tried to trade Rob Gronkowski before the damn season for Crochet. Anyway, I'm rambling. Good thing.
Well, before we let you go, Tom, we often get predictions from you. We don't need a prediction for this game. This game's not even really a game in a lot of ways. So let's go ahead and do an off-season prediction. I'm going to give you a group or an individual. You tell me if they will be back next year. Let's start with Jerod Mayo.
Oh, what are we doing? Come on, bruv.
What?
He's not kidding. Come on, Arkan.
No?
No.
Fine.
yeah, no, that was fun for a minute.
What?
I would predict. I would.
Have you heard of aggregation?
Like, you know what? I'll play. More likely than not, Jerod Mayo will be back.
Okay.
Because I think it'll be difficult to secure the one candidate that would make sense to move on too, if you have decided Jerod isn't your guy.
All right, and then just for the sake of this, the coordinators, let's make it nice and nebulous.
How
about the coordinators?
I think DeMarcus Covington has got to be replaced, unfortunately. Okay. He's got to be replaced. It's been too staggering a decline on that side of the ball, and they are not without talent. And I say much more grudgingly, Alex Van Pelt probably will be replaced, but he so tremendously does not deserve to be summarily swept out the door. And you listen to Hunter Henry the other day, and I spoke, you know, off the record to another player. He's like, the last thing that Drake May needs is to start from scratch with somebody else. It's not on. It is the players. And to bring it down even closer, it is the wideouts. It is the wideout room. It's then you can talk about the offensive line, but it's very, you can find where the fire has started very quickly.
Yes, and you can find the accelerants as well. Tommy Kern, it's been great talking with you all season long on this show and certainly on the other show in the afternoons. Thanks so much for all the great content over the course of the season, and have a great offseason, and we'll look forward to talking with
you
here and other places.
Thank you for your patience with me throughout the season. Every time I bristle and say, what the hell?
That's all right.
Thank you.
I'm used to it at this
point.
Appreciate
working with you guys.
That's Tommy Kern, NBC Sports Boston. You can catch him on pre- and post-game on that network today. And you can also hear him here on WEEI Afternoons and with Jones and Keefe. Here is Dan Ball. He's going to get you caught up on what's trending. And when we come back, I believe we've located Fitzy, and we will talk with him. WEEI Football Sunday. Mego had to leave. I wanted to give her a proper send-off, but I was too busy talking about Tommy Kern and how great he is, and I forgot Mego had to go. So Mego's out. It's me and Dan Ball. Thomas behind the glass, 617-779-7937. If you'd like to join the conversation, and joining us right now from what has got to be the saddest, most depressing tailgate situation in maybe Patriots history is our own Nick Fitzy Stevens, who joins us right now.
So,
there he is.
You guys play? Did you guys play Jamie's Crying as a rejoin? Because whoa, Fitzy's crying.
That's exactly right. Thomas just gave two big thumbs up in the back there.
Everyone can hear me, Arcand. Everyone outside Gillette Stadium can hear this conversation right now because nobody's here. This, unlike most of us after we finish our Christmas suppers, is light. It is light. It is thin in attendance. It is cold like our souls and our outlook on our football team. And let me share this quick story. So I get here at like 9:30, walked around for almost an hour and a half, just going to some of the usual tailgates, take the temperature, talk to some of the STMs and whatnot, season ticket members, Dan. We get fancy with our acronyms
around here. Thank you.
So you're welcome very little. So I go talking to, you know, some of the old favorites, and I go over to Tailgater 2000. They've been coming for 30 years. They got a little bus that they drive up from the Cape. And this guy, Jerry, a.k.a. the Reverend, he does a little poem and a prayer before
the guy,
everyone.
The guy with the bar. I saw him on I see him? On some TV show. But, yeah, I definitely saw him.
Like the Dynasty. He was on NFL Network talking Brady's return against Mac Jones a few years ago. Great guy. Anyway, he sees me as I walk up to warm my hands at their Solo stove. He looks at me. He takes the cigar out of his mouth. He puts down his chicken wing, and he just walks over, finger in my chest. He goes, if they win this effing game today.
People are going to be mad. No one's looking for a win today. Bills fans are there. Patriots to win this game.
Nobody wants the Patriots to win today. That's all people were shouting at me today. They were like, hey, Fitzy, take off. Like, somebody yelled at me when I was in front of the Showcase Cinemas walking towards the stadium. Somebody yelled, Fitzy, take off your Pats gear and put on a Bills jersey today. Come on, guy.
Go jump through a table.
Is Buffalo represented there today?
I would say, straight up, no joke, it's a 50-50 split. Wow, The Buffalo Bills fans, they're not as raucous as they usually are because now there's no need to be like defiant or obnoxious or like they don't. It's not many more about like proving that they belong here or trying to get what we had for so long that they covet. They're there and they're not going anywhere anytime soon. So now, minus the championships, they're starting to develop just a little bit of that entitlement. So much so that at that same tailgate earlier, somebody says, like, hey, Fitzy, this is my buddy Mitch. He's been a season ticket holder in Orchard Park for 20-something years. I say hello to him. He comes over and he goes, hey, you want some advice on sucking? Because I know. And then he proceeds to tell me, he's like, for 25 years, we were the worst. You were the best. How's it feel now, bitch? And I was like, oh, wow, this got aggressive quickly. I mean, you know what I'm here to today, guys? Like, if people need to boo, go ahead. When you see when you see the sad Modern Family looking guy, when you see the melted Kennedy cousin on the Jumbotron today, go ahead, boo me. Don't boo the players. They've been through enough. Don't boo the coaches. They're all exhausted. Don't boo ownership. They got work to do. Go ahead, boo me if you need to. If you got to take it out on somebody today, your old pal Fitzy is here to represent the nation and take the slings and arrows.
Though I appreciate you putting your, you know, going first in the line of battle for this, why shouldn't fans be booing? Because I certainly think that they're going to be, and I don't think they're going to be directed towards you.
The only reason why they're going to boo today, spoiler alert. I don't usually get too many, you know, game operations pieces of intel, but I think they'll be introducing the offense on the Jumbotron today when the team takes the field. Put it that way, Dan.
Because
you don't want to give the fans an extra chance to get riled up. And to a man and a fan, I will say they've all said the same thing. Like, I've been coming for 21 years, 7 years. This is my kid's first game, 45 years, and I haven't even missed a game, including my own daughter's wedding. All these different stories I hear, they were all legitimate, like, not just mad, they were hurt. They were like, they found Tavai's comments legitimately hurtful. Like, do you know how long we've been coming, how many iterations of this team we've supported, where we were back in the snake pit at the old Foxborough Stadium, you know, Schaefer Stadium, Sullivan, whatever you want to call it. They were all legitimately hurt by it. And, you know, the tone-deaf semi-apology that he read hostage tape style didn't do any good. And, you know, the organization's mad. They're disappointed. We're disappointed. Like, this can't end quickly enough. So, Dan, I honestly think the only reason why you'll hear people boo today, like, they're just exhausted. They just want to try to have a little fun today and go home. But the only reason why they'll boo today is if the Pats win.
Yeah, that would certainly Seriously. Ruin a lot of people's days. No question about it. I'm not sure if you saw this or not, Fitzy, but Adam Schefter on the NFL, what's his show? NFL Countdown was talking
NFL
about
something or other. Yeah.
NFL something. He did all the coaches who were on the hot seat, and for Gerard Mayo, said he is leaning towards out. As in Gerard Mayo leaning towards out. We've heard Andrew Callahan, Dan Shaughnessy, Chad Graff, Mike Giardi on our show. Even Mike Reese went in on the Mayo recently. So where does that stand? I know you hear all the whispers around there at King's Landing. Where's Gerard Mayo stand right now?
In the eyes of the fans, it was actually kind of a 50-50 split in any pregame conversations today down here. Half of it was, tell me what area of the team improved. You know, nothing got better during the season. I can't do any more of the walkbacks and the verbal miscues. And then half of them were sympathetic. They're like, but ownership gave him a bunch of rookie coaches and coordinators and the worst roster in the NFL. He is, you don't even really know what kind of guy he is because he's been stammering and stuttering and apologizing for everything all year. So I'd say it's probably a little more towards just blow the whole coaching staff out as opposed to being sympathetic towards him. But, hey, listen, you know, I've heard a few rumblings that there could be some crazy things going on here this week. And then, of course, people lit Twitter on fire last night when Mike Vrabel changed his Twitter avatar to himself in a Patriots uniform again.
That was something. I mean, that's like the hot chick saying it's complicated on her Facebook page. You know what I mean? Like, oh, yeah, here's my old Patriots jersey.
Or right after you break, or right after you get divorced, she puts up a photograph of her with her high school boyfriend, and you're like, I'm not even going to let the wedding ring get, the wedding ring's not even cold, damn it.
That was a tough one, yes. All right, Fitzy, I know you're a crunch for time here, so we'll let you go. Thank you for all your great insight into the tailgate and beyond all year long. It's been a lot of fun, and also you can hear Fitzy today on the Six Rings post-game show. I'm sure you'll be talking a lot of this type of stuff and what the offseason's going to be like, what's going to happen on Monday, and so forth. I look forward to listening to it, Fitzy. Thanks for a great season.
Hey, buddy, listen, I really look forward to the spot every week. I think you guys do an awesome job, high energy. You set the table well. It's a shame the results in the games haven't lived up to it, but keep up the great work, Dan. Welcome to the party, pal, and I'll talk to you all tonight on the Six Rings post-game show with Hart. There is no God. Go Pats.
All right, very good. That's Nick Fitzy Stevens, your old pal Fitzy, joining us here on WEEI Football Sunday for the final time. Patriots and Actives are out. We have them. Ready for them? Do we have a siren? Play a siren or something back there, Tom. Come on. Let's get some sound effects
going.
Let's get some imaging going.
There's going to be no energy in the building.
The Patriots inactives are out. I swear. They're out.
The computer just froze on me.
The computer froze. It's a terrible time for that to happen. All right, here's your Patriots inactives. Christian Gonzalez, out. We knew that. Jermichael Hasty, out. Lester Cotton, who's that? He's a guard. He's not playing. City So, I know him. He's out. Right. Hunter Henry, not playing. Mitchell Wilcox, tight end, never seen him before. He's not playing. That's it. The quarterbacks, all three of them are available today. That includes Drake May. That includes Joe Milton. He's not the emergency third backup. He is in uniform and is active. I think that means he's playing today.
Yeah.
We'll see how much that actually means he's going to play, period. But he will, I think, get in and get some snaps today. I hope he plays the whole game, honestly. I don't see any reason why you need to go Drake May even for a series. Why? What does he need to play one series for?
Is this I was thinking about it as you guys were talking about it, and the fact that he's coming off of a relatively poor performance, arguably his worst of the season against Los Angeles. I wonder if there's a conversation between the coaching staff and the player of, listen, we want you to end your season on a high note. Mm-hmm. Have a rhythmic drive to end the season.
That was Pauly from Dedham's very weird description of what he wants to see today.
Vaguely sexual term that he decided to go with, mm-hmm. but have a strong drive, hopefully end with a touchdown or at least kind of get the feel back and what it means to move the ball.
So that his season doesn't end on that Chargers game. I kind of get that. I kind of get that.
Because that's legitimately all I can think of. And if it's one series or two,
what if he goes out there and throws another pick six? You know, like, what if it gets worse?
Right. And that's just as likely because this Bills defense, even though they're going to be resting some of their starters, they're very deep. I mean, they went second, third stringers with Cam Lewis and Kyer Elam and Baylen Spector mm-hmm. and these guys with a lot of injuries they had, and they were still really good. So that's just
they're sitting a lot of guys, too. I just got there inactive. So Teron Johnson's out. Amari Cooper's not playing. Terrell Bernard, Christian Benford, Greg Russo, Deion Dawkins, Ed Oliver, and Daquan Jones. That's okay. A lot of their – the whole
so
defensive front
defense.
Basically is not playing. Yeah. Okay. I mean, listen, I agree with you. I think that you're right. But even with that, the Buffalo's backups against the Patriots starters.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Buffalo's backups. It is.
There's just as good of a chance that he throws a pick as he does a touchdown, and then what are we doing here?
Yeah. Adam Schefter on ESPN, NFL Countdown, talking about Gerard Mayo's future with the Patriots. He said he had different designations for each one of these coaches. Do we have the sound?
Yes.
Okay. Here's what it sounded like when they got to Gerard Mayo.
Start with Gerard Mayo, the New England Patriots head coach. Now, all along, the Kraft family has wanted to stand by him and give him support. He was the hand-chosen successor to Bill Belichick. But over the last 30 days or so, the team has struggled. They've lost at home. Fans have been angered. They've been apathetic. And it feels like within the organization, there's been a shift. There's nervous people inside the building right now. And we are going to go leaning out right now for Gerard Mayo.
Leaning out. You know what that kind of reminded me of? The music and the way he sort of gave a ding at the end there. You know the show with Jim Cramer, Mad Money?
Oh, yeah.
Where he's like, I want you to buy this stock. Like, that's basically what he was doing there with Gerard Mayo. He's like, Gerard Mayo, sell Gerard Mayo. Like, that's kind of what was happening there. And I think that that's where, listen, Adam Schefter's not just going to come out and say that. All right, he went down the list. He did all the Doug Peterson out. You know, Kevin Stefanski safe. Mike McCarthy safe. Leaning to safe. Leaning to out. Whatever. Leaning to out with Gerard Mayo is a massive shift. And we talk to Adam Schefter every Wednesday, and there's not one point this season where he said, yeah, you know, I'm leaning towards him being out. It was always, let's see how these last 3 weeks go. Let's see how this last month goes. Let's see how these last two games go. That's really what they're going to be looking at. And right now, they're going to keep Gerard Mayo. But if things get really, really bad at the end here, if it becomes a total calamity, I think that exact word was used. I don't know if it was used by Schefter, but it was used by other people. If it's a total calamity, then they may reserve the right to change their mind. And that's something that you just heard Tommy Curran say to us, too. They're not going to make a statement because then what if they change their mind? I think they may have changed their mind.
Well, the timeline that he shared is significant. Within the last 30 days is when people in the Patriots front office have gotten uncomfortable. 30 days is roughly after the bye, mm-hmm. starting with Arizona, then Buffalo, Chargers, now to Buffalo. And has there really been a positive other than some good play in the first half against Buffalo, which, like Mego talked about, seemed to be, you know, the lockup that Mayo was for sure returning with the way they played. But you know, the last 30 days, how poorly they played out of the bye and then how poorly they play in front of their home fans, on top of all the walkbacks that you talked about, it's taken a terrible, terrible turn from what was already a pretty bad space to go into the bye.
Yeah, I agree. And the walkbacks and the constant foot-and-mouth stuff with Gerard Mayo has not been good, obviously, but it's one of those things that I look at and think, if they were 12-4 coming into this game, all the walkbacks. Well, I was going to start Ramondre Stevenson, but it's Antonio Gibson, or I don't want to single out players, but that Kayshon Booty's really got to catch the ball. Like, all that stuff that he's done over the years. And it's been rough. I mean, it's been rough listening to it. It's been great for us because we get to play the sound the next day. We get to make fun of it. Greg Hill and, you know, Wiggy and Courtney and Curtis and all of them, they get to rip on his shine, get the real explanation for what he actually meant the next day. Like, it's great. It's been, for us, I think, terrific. But for him, it's been part of the picture. Now, I don't think that communicating with the media is something that is hugely important when it comes to being a successful NFL head coach. And if you need any proof of that, Bill Belichick was here for 20 years, and he could give a rat's ass about communicating with the media, anything ever. So you can succeed without being good at that. But when you aren't succeeding, and you're also bad at it, then there's no real way to spin it. You know, like, yeah. For Mayo, the only way to spin this thing with Jerod Mayo, there's two ways. There's two things in the last week, and you already know one of these. But with him, you can't properly evaluate me. If I'm Mayo, I'm saying you can't properly evaluate me because look at this roster and look at all these people you surrounded me with and my coaching staff. It's all a bunch of rookies.
Which
we're
is
all
legitimate,
just doing it for the first time. It is. That's legitimate. That doesn't explain the gaffes and everything, but put that to the side for a second because really, who cares? Then there's the whole thing with Jelani Tavai this week. Jelani Tavai, in defense of his head coach, Jerod Mayo, went after the fans, and he wasn't the first one to do it. He was definitely the most strident about it.
Yeah.
He was definitely
Godchild
the most,
did it after the game, though.
Godchild did it after the game. Dietrich Wise said that the fans were spoiled after the game. Like, and they both came back and sort of tried to dress up what they said as if they meant something else, but the damage was done. It was out there. And then here comes Jelani Tavai. You fans need to know your place. That was all done, as bad as that was. And it was bad. I mean, it was terrible. You can't say those things. As bad as that was, though, if I'm evaluating Jerod Mayo, all of those guys on a 3-14 team, which is probably what they're going to be, 3-13 team here, instead of saying, and I've heard people do this, I've heard with Matt Eberflus and the Bears this year, you heard players in that locker room saying, "This, you know, we've lost it with this guy. A change, maybe there needs to be a change." You heard it with the Jets. You heard it with Josh McDaniels and the Raiders.
It's happening with the Giants. Malik Nabers said it about Brian Daboll.
Daboll, Nabers, I don't know if he's going to be back.
Yeah.
You're hearing that. You did not hear that here. You heard guys, rather than throw their head coach under the bus, attack the fans. Now, the flip side to that is, Jerod Mayo is a culture builder. His whole thing is the culture, right? We're going to have a great culture here. So far, your culture has led you to a 3-13 record, and your players are attacking the fans. That's not the culture, I don't think, that the Crafts are looking for. But in terms of his ability to lead guys and get them on his side and get them to try and pull in the same direction, that whole thing, all those outbursts after the game, I look at that and I think, huh. Well, you know, they could have very easily turned on him. They could have turned on him and said, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. This guy's the worst coach I've ever played for. This guy, if they move on from him and bring in a real coach, then you'll see how good we really are. He didn't say that. He didn't say any of that.
No.
And a lot of those guys played for Belichick on a better defense last year. I found that interesting. I found that very interesting. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. When we come back, we'll hear from Coach Wiggy for the last time this year. Wiggy's keys, which were not called in today. He actually did them on Friday. That's next. WEEI Football Sunday, Christian Arkin, Dan Ball, you at 617-779-7937. We'll get to Wiggy's Keys here in just 1 minute, but Mike Giardi just tweeted that Drake May is expected to start the game today. So he will be out there. Joe Milton is not inactive today. That was a double negative. I apologize to any English teachers out there. He is active today, is what I meant to say. But he's not going to start. According to Tom Pelissero, it is going to be Drake May starting. We don't know how much he's going to play. But again, I remind you that you do have Joe Milton available to go in there. I think that you will see a good amount of him. I hope you see a good amount of him. I don't really want to see too much of Drake May today at all. 617-779-7937. All right, you ready for Wiggy's Keys?
Always.
You ready for Wiggy's Keys? Are you ready for Wiggy's Keys, Thomas?
I am ready, I promise.
For the last time of the 2024-2025 NFL season here on WEEI Football Sunday. Let's get to key number one.
All right, here are my three keys to victory.
Number one, play Joe Milton.
That's easy.
That's all right. So I like how he said key to victory and said play Joe Milton. I don't know if he means like a victory on the scoreboard, a victory in the moral victory. Maybe he means something like that. Maybe
he's got a draft board.
A draft board victory. You want to hold on to that number one overall seat. If that's the victory you're looking for, then I agree. You should play Joe Milton. I also just want to see what Joe Milton can do. I want to see Joe Milton uncork one 80 yards down the field in the air. I don't even care if there's a receiver in the vicinity. I just want to see a big, long throw, and that's it. I've run out of things to look forward to here with this team. There's nothing else, really. We've seen enough plays from Drake May. I know what he can do. I know that he's good. I don't want to see him continue to regress at the end of the season if he hit the rookie wall here or whatever. Let's see Joe Milton go out there every down. I don't want him to hand the ball off once. I just want him unleashing the dragon from quarter one to quarter four, and that's it. I don't need to see anything else today.
Well, there's really no losing in having, I know it's a key to victory, but there is no losing. It's all under the guise, Christian, of it's observation.
Right.
We're seeing what we have. We know Brissett's contract is up. We want to see if this kid, who we know has arm talent, might not be a passer of the football, but we know he has the arm talent. We want to see if he's good enough to be our backup going into 25. Perfect. At best, like you said, he uncorks a couple of highlight reel throws. Mm-hmm. It starts the whole conversation in the media. Well, is Drake May really the cornerstone quarterback? Should they have traded him in the first place? Should they try to trade him for draft picks? Whatever. That's at its best. At its worst, he sucks, turns the ball over a bunch, and you lose the game.
Yep.
Darn. How could that possibly happen? I see no losing.
Now, Mark Daniels, about 15 minutes ago, showed pictures of two Patriots quarterbacks warming up, the only two Patriots quarterbacks warming up, Drake May and Joe Milton, which means Jacoby Brissett was not warming up, which means, well, it doesn't mean it yet. We'll see what happens at the end of the game. But what it potentially means here is that for the second straight year to end the game, to end the season, that the guy who started week one is getting benched in week 18. Remember, because Mac Jones didn't play in that game, I don't think.
Right.
It was Zappe, and the backup was, I forget who the backup even was. Who was the backup at the end in that Jets game last year? Because Mac was a scratch, remember? Mac ended up, they didn't even give him a uniform on that, I don't think.
Right. I'm grabbing that real quick.
So, yeah. So this could be the, I don't know. I think Brissett's active, so it's not exactly the same. But if he doesn't play, then that'll be the second straight year that they had the backup or whoever, and that the starter from week one is sitting there watching the whole thing from the bench. So interesting. Anyway,
and it's not in a good way either.
If you definitely, were, you know, definitely not up, in a good way.
Well, if you take the score out of it, oh, they benched the quarterback. Great, they locked up the division. Not quite, but either way, that's something.
All right, let's get to key number two.
Number two, play Joe Milton.
Okay, number one, play Joe Milton. Number two, play Joe Milton. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that key number three involves Joe Milton.
And number three, play Joe Milton because he gives you the best chance of losing so you could get the number one overall pick.
Key okay. to victory. Key to victory for the best chance to lose.
For the best chance to lose. You know what? It's nice that Wiggy remembered to do the keys this week. He may have mailed them in a little bit, but that's okay. play Joe Milton. The keys to victory if you want to hold on to that first overall pick. Let's talk about that first overall pick here for a minute.
Yeah.
Are you a trade back out of the first overall pick if that's where they end up here? Because I'll tell you what, Cleveland last night, they're like, we're not getting out of this top three, man. We are securing our spot. We are putting Bailey Zappe in there, and we are going to lose this game, and we are going to assure ourselves of a very high draft pick here. There's no way. No one's going to confuse us with one of these four-win teams or whatever. That being said, if the Patriots end up with the first overall pick, which I think that they will, and I think playing Joe Milton is going to play a role in that, what do you think they should do with it?
I am team trade down, and I know that your team, Travis Hunter, is a blue chip prospect.
Bet your ass I am.
And take him. And I think you're perfectly justified in saying that. I look at it as what gives the Patriots the best chance to build the best roster the soonest. And I do think the more draft picks that you can accumulate, the better chance you have to do that. What gives me pause, however, is not what they would do, it's who's doing it. And as we evaluated Elliott Wolf in the draft process from last year, it was, well, they got Drake May right, and everything else was kind of a dumpster fire,
mm-hmm.
which does scare me if you give him, all right, now here's the third, fourth, fifth pick, and another first-round pick and a couple seconds, thirds, whatever ends up being in that package. I don't know how much I trust him to be able to do that, but I still think they should try.
I'm with you on that last part for sure. If Elliott Wolf is still the GM, you want him wheeling and dealing your first overall pick? when you could get a potential franchise cornerstone? Like, is that something you're willing to risk, Patriots fans? And I don't know if it's going to be him, so maybe it won't be, and this whole thing will be moot. But if it is Elliott Wolf, if they don't move on from Elliott Wolf, if they keep him in his position right now as the main guy with the draft and his staff and everybody else who were responsible for this past year's draft and free agency class, then, yeah, I think I'm just okay with him picking first overall. I think you just get that blue chip player. If it's Travis Hunter, which I think he's the blue chipper, but whoever they think it is, I'll be mad if it's not Hunter, but if they think it's somebody else, then fine.
Yeah.
You go ahead and you draft him, or if you can stay in the top three and move down somehow because you think that, Cleveland, who's second and third after them anyway on Tankathon right now? I'm not even sure.
I know it's the Giants and okay.
Tennessee.
Oh, in Tennessee, right, and they both want quarterback. Yeah,
well,
so that makes
that's
sense.
The best setup.
But if they really want one more than the other, then yeah. That's the only reason you can get one of them to trade with you, so... Then sure, if like New York's in love with Shador, they're in love with Cam, then fine. But if they're not, then the only way you can really make a trade is to trade out of the top three. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to trade out of the top three. I don't trust Elliott Wolf outside of the top three.
Right.
It's really what it's about. I don't trust him to make the right call. I don't trust him to trade back, wheel and deal, and go, you know, deeper into the draft with other first round picks. I don't know who's going to be the GM in a year or two. I do think, in a vacuum, I'd agree with you. In a vacuum, I'd say, yeah, sure, you don't need a quarterback this year. You don't need the first overall pick. This isn't considered a very deep draft is another thing.
Right.
So how much do you want to wheel and deal back into the later rounds, back into the first round?
To find the diamond in the rough.
Well, that's risky to me. You're not a diamond in the rough kind of team. You're a get the diamond that everyone can see kind of team. You know, like right. that's what you should be. You shouldn't be looking in the rough. You're picking first overall. Forget the rough. Like you're picking, you have first pick. Go get what you want. You know, forget about the rough. I don't care about that. And, you see if you can hit on one other guy this time and go with that. But if it's Elliott Wolf, I don't feel good about any of it. I really don't. It is Cleveland at 3-14. New England at 3-13, Tennessee and the Giants. Cleveland's probably going for a new quarterback despite their big financial commitment there to Deshaun Watson. Jacksonville's probably good. Carolina's probably good. The Jets could trade up. Vegas could trade up. I wouldn't go that far back.
No.
The Jets are picking 7th, Vegas picking 8th. I don't want to get out of the top 5. I don't even want to get out of the top 3. So, no, I wouldn't trade back. Even if they gave you a great pet with first-round picks for the next 2 years, don't care. Go ahead and get that blue chipper right now. You're not a team that can dink around with that stuff. You're not, we got to wait for the right. No. You have the first overall pick now. Go out and get the best players. You need talent on this team. You don't have it.
The one thing that does give me a little bit of comfort, all four of the teams that you talked about at the top at 3-13, mm-hmm. or 3-14 in Cleveland's case, they do need a quarterback. So
yep.
you should theoretically be able to trade back and stay in the top four, but what you need to do is stay in the top three. Because if you could somehow trade that pick and get Travis Hunter at 3, that'd be incredible.
Right.
But
if the first two go, then Hunter's probably going third. So if you're fourth,
that'd be my guess.
Yeah.
The one team that I look at as the X factor is the Giants, because I've already seen Shedeur Sanders with his custom red Giants cleats. Like it seems like they are very.
He was
much
in New York City
player.
Too, right? Weren't they throwing the ball in the street or something?
Yeah,
like that? Yeah,
I think he was throwing to neighbors. Like
I think you're right.
I think he's very much there. There's very much like kind of the connection without the connection. Definitely not tampering happening there. But the one team that I wonder if you can leverage up to 1 from 3 would be New York if they're there, but again, a lot of the chips have to fall where they may here
true.
This week.
I'm also seeing a lot of people, writers, saying that, yeah, you know, there's a lot of teams out there that don't have Shedeur as a top 5 prospect, which, fine. I mean, maybe these are teams that aren't picking that high, and what do they care, but that's interesting to me. I don't know how much demand there's going to be. You know, we're waiting for this big trade and people offering this giant package of picks and players and all this other stuff to get Shedeur Sanders. I don't know if they want him that much. You know, there's always teams that are desperate for quarterbacks and they'll do desperate things to get them. But there may not be that same kind of grade. This is not considered a great draft for that. So we'll see. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll be joined by Andy Hart coming up next hour. And also we'll get to your phone calls right after this.
Play Joe Milton.